Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Alright, don't know if y'all can hear that, but this is Speak It Like You Think It Radio. Came in with the weak ass I'm Coming Home intro, some Diddy song I've never heard in my life, but it is what it is. It's apropos for tonight. So we're going to get into it, man. Tonight I am joined by Controversial Truth, the great Naughty Dread. So I know we're going to get some good truth out of you tonight. What's up, man?
Oh, man, you already know what time it is. Saint Sue, Jerry Reed.
Indeed, indeed. And tonight is a wonderful night, man. We got free agency going on. And just the way everything was going, I wanted this to be exciting. Wanted some things to change in the league. The NBA is trying to be a year-round league like the NFL is. And can't get no bigger than this story. LeBron James back to Cleveland. Your initial thoughts before we start getting into the what the fanatics are thinking right now. Your initial thoughts.
Well, my initial thoughts, I was surprised. I was shocked because I thought that this was the last thing that was going to happen. But as, well, you know, as the days, as the weeks was coming down to it, I was really warming up to it because it was like it was about to happen. If it came down, I felt like if it was really coming down to Cleveland and Miami, if it was like Cleveland was actually in the hunt, then it was going to be Cleveland. Because you can't, he wasn't going to spurn those people twice. You know what I'm saying? So after I figured out that it was going to be Cleveland, I kind of opened up to it. I mean, I'm okay with it. I kind of like it, you know. You know, I wanted him to chase chips for the rest of his career. I wanted him to go to New York and play with Melo. But he decided to go home and be a leader again and try to get some championships on his own instead of, you know, helping D. Wade improve his legacy, because that's all he did by running to Miami and helping Wade get two more chips under his belt.
We disagree on that, but we'll get into that in a minute. But just the idea of seeing the Cleveland fans outside of his house, gathering outside of his home, going crazy on Twitter. Like you said, once it started to build up, it was like, wait a minute, this got to be real. Ain't no way he would build these folks' hopes up again and crush them, even though I would have paid to see that. Oh, man, that would have been funny. The crying Cleveland fans spurned again. But like you said, I mean, that was the indicator. And shout out to the great Pierre, caller, you know, one personality that's always on the show. Pierre gave me the heads up days ago. He's going back to Cleveland. I talked to my sources. I didn't want to believe Pierre. I thought Pierre was wrong. He hit it on the head 100.
Well, you know, like I said, four or five days ago, I mean, the writing was pretty much on the wall that he was going back to Cleveland. It was just a matter of formality, you know, him actually coming out and said, but all the moves that had been made was shown that he was going back to Cleveland.
Yeah, that Jared Jack trade, that last one where they dumped some salary, you know, gave mm-hmm. themselves some maneuverability. It was like, oh, man, these boys, either they all in or they crazy. And from what it looks like, they were all in. They were ready to do it. Dan Gilbert gave the apology LeBron needed as far as for closing the deal. And they made it happen, man. But I don't know if it was more LeBron choosing them than it was the sales pitch and the roster moves. What's your take on that? Do you think LeBron was more the driving force, or his friends and family and Dan Gilbert and everybody?
No, I think LeBron was the driving force. I think he wanted. I think his friends and family, the friends that he has in Akron, you know, he's always around doing stuff in Cleveland and Akron area, doing charity work. You know, he got a lot of people he care about up in that area, so I believe he wanted to go home, and he's older now, he's more mature, he's looking at it different, and I think that he wants to accept the challenge of bringing a championship to Cleveland, and that'll be great for his legacy. I don't know if he'll be able to win enough in Cleveland to surpass the legacies of the Kobe's or the Tim Duncan's. You know, I'm not even getting to the Michael Jordan's yet, but those guys, even if you can get to Kobe or Duncan's level, I mean, that's great in itself. So I don't know if he'll be able to win enough in Cleveland to get to that level as far as his legacy goes. But he's undoubtedly a great player. He's undoubtedly the best player in the league right now. And they got some young pieces in Cleveland. If they can bring Kevin Love in, then that'll help, you know, help him get some extra championships. But, you know, it's just, I think he just wanted to go home, man, and accept the challenge of being a leader instead of being a part of something. Instead of being at the press conference with him and Wade, now it's going to be him. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's not the big three no more. It's the big one. And he has a lot of responsibility. You know, he has to make Kyrie Irving, who is an all-star, he has to make him a Hall of Famer. You know, he has to make some of the other guys who are good players all-stars. If he get Kevin Love, he has to make Kevin Love a Hall of Famer. You know, this is how his legacy is going to be remembered. Can he make the other players around him better? You know, and win a championship. So it's a huge task ahead of him, and I'm glad that he's taking it on personally. But I think it was all about him. I don't think Cleveland's pitch had anything to do with it.
Yeah, and that All-Star to Hall of Fame question, the answer is always, what do they do on the big stage? If you perform on the big stage in the big moments, in those memorable situations, then you can make that leap from All-Star to Hall of Famer. But if you never get the opportunity and you're just an all-star, then that's all people will see you as. So Kyrie is going to get that chance now to show that he is what some people think he is. Kevin Love, supposedly, you know, if they're able to make the trade, who knows? The great Jerry West is out there in Golden State. Who knows? He might pull off something and sweeten the deal and steal him before Cleveland can get him. So that's not a done deal yet either. But
there's no deal better than Andrew Wiggins. That's the best deal is on. This is going to be out there. You're trying to start over. You're trying to sell tickets in Minnesota. You know, I'm not a believer, you know, necessarily of Andrew Wiggins, but, you know, they need an opportunity to have a guy who may one day be a guy who can lead them to a championship. So, you know, they got to keep trying, you know, in Minnesota. And Kevin Love is out, so. Wiggins is the best thing. If Cleveland is not willing to part with Wiggins, then you look in another direction.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't need to entertain anything else.
That Klay Thompson chip is a big chip from Golden State if they decide to put that on the table. But like you said, Wiggins outweighs that because you're talking about potential.
Exactly.
Potential. That enticing thing that gets us all. But look, let's get into some of the fanatic talk, and I'll give you the fanatic angle. And you tell me how you talk some of these people off the ledge. Okay, you got some people saying, why would you play for an owner who wrote that letter about you and feels who some people think feels a certain way about you? Why would you play for a guy like that? You say to that those folks what?
All the owners are just about the same. Mickey Harrison is just like Dan Gilbert. He's just like Don Sterling. He's just like Mark Cuban. You know, it's all the same. You know, it's not even about the owner. I'm not here playing for the owner. He's not there playing for the owner. He's there playing for the city of Cleveland and those people and those fans who want something positive to happen in Cleveland. That's what he's doing it for. Now, is Dan Gilbert going to benefit? Yes. Is the casinos and all the car lot and all the houses, the industry in Cleveland? Are they going to benefit? Yes. You know what I'm saying? Is the employment rate going to go up in Cleveland? Yes. But he's not doing, you know what I'm saying? But he's doing that for the people who like Cleveland basketball and the sports in that region and want to see Cleveland finally have a winner because the city is a city of losers. They never win nothing. You know, so
dude, I'm glad you brought that angle. I'm glad
it
had
you nothing to do with
up.
Dan Gilbert. It had nothing to do with the owner.
No, but I'm glad you brought the angle up financially because LeBron going back to Cleveland is like when GM opens up a factory in an area. Like that's the kind of economic you know, revitalization we're talking about in Cleveland. If you're a guy who sold your bar when LeBron left, you are looking sick right now because that bar just, I mean, the value of that bar just escalated with the signing of a piece of paper, with this man signing a piece of paper in the next few days. That's how much that life has changed for people in Cleveland, man. This is a revival economically for them. And there's nobody else that could do that. So, I mean, that's one thing you have to give to LeBron James. And it's going to be interesting how that plays out. But going back to the fans, I see a lot of people attacking the Miami fans. Well, let's see how many real Miami Heat fans are left. How many were bandwagon just LeBron fans? Will we see them slip as far as their status, Friday night games and all that?
Of course, because what you had, you didn't have that many Miami Heat fans. You had a lot of LeBron James fans, you know, and that's okay because they're LeBron James fans, so the team that he plays for, they automatically, by association, they want that team to do well. You know, that's understandable. Now you're going to see more Cleveland fans, you know, and that's just how it's going to go. You're not going to see – there's not that many diehard Miami Heat fans. Never have been.
I agree.
Hell, even with LeBron, Bosh, and Wade, they were showing up late to the game. The game might not be sold out. I mean, they're not diehard basketball fans down there like that in Miami. You know, it's just a good city with South Beach, and, you know, as far as that's concerned, that part of the city anyway. And, you know, it looked good on TV, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, those folks down there, you know, they should be happy for what LeBron did for them for 4 years.
I agree. They should be happy. Had a nice four-year marriage. Went to the finals four times. Won two chips. Can't be mad at the man. He left. It is what it is.
Yeah.
That's the game.
Still gonna be right. You know, because, see, LeBron was never there. See, that's what a lot of people have to realize. Miami has always been Wade's team. One set says that towards the Wade, it's been Wade's team. Wade taught Bosh and Bron down to Miami to help him win some more chips for his legacy. Now, Bron can go. You know what I'm saying? Pat Riley, like, he sold them for today. We've been winning. You know what I'm saying? I was winning 60 games with Tim Hardaway and Lonzo Mourning. I bought Shaq in. We got a chip. I got LeBron and Bosh come down here. We got a chip. I'm going to make a move. We're going to compete for championships. Ain't I showed y'all this what we over the last 19 years? Haven't we shown you that we're going to compete for chips? So
yeah,
that
sounds good now coming out of Riley's mouth, but that
it do
that,
sound
that
good
pressure,
because it's proven.
Yeah, but
look at his track record.
Yeah, but we got to look at another thing, too. That pressure that he gave a couple weeks ago where he was defiant and damn near daring LeBron or Bosh or Wade or anybody to try to make a move, I think that kind of showed that Pat, man, he might not have the same on that fastball that he used to have, man, because –
No, I would say that.
Man, that was a tone-deaf press conference, man. This was not the time for that.
No, I mean he had to do what he had to do to try to get the man to come back. You see, the thing that Pat Riley was fighting against, he wasn't fighting against somebody else out negotiating him or something like that. He had all the leverage. It's just some fact LeBron wanting to go back home and win and do something for the people of Cleveland and try to win a chip up there. That's the only thing that took LeBron from Miami.
I would say more the CBA. Dan Gilbert and the other small time owners of the CBA put this huge penalty of a luxury tax onto teams spending more to try to create more parity in the NBA, which is impossible. But they're
didn't do it. Pat didn't do it. Brian wanted to go back to Cleveland. Point
yeah,
right.
But hold on. Just hear me out, though. Hear me out. I hear you saying
he had the last contract in his hand when he went to LeBron. So money was not an issue. You know what I'm saying?
That's not the thing I'm talking about. That's not what I'm talking about. When you have that huge penalty for luxury tax, that makes Mickey Arison amnesty Mike Miller. And that makes their breathing room so hard that they end up signing scrap heap guys who normally they wouldn't go after. That's why we had Michael Beasley. Oh, excuse me. The beer's getting to me. That's why they had Michael Beasley and Greg Oden and some of these other fringe signings that really didn't pan out the last 2 years because he didn't have room to maneuver because of the CBA.
Well, they went to the championship both of them years and won one.
Mm-hmm.
See, a lot of times where people we gotta get away from. I understand it's about winning championship. That's the big thing. Just because they lost in the finals don't mean they were unsuccessful. I mean, on the grand scheme of things, but they still went to the championship. There are 30 other teams in the league that didn't get to the peak that they got to. For four years in a row, they have run the East. They've been in the championship every year. You know what I'm saying? So they have been successful. You know, you put a piece in, like I said, it's hard to win a championship. And for them to get the four finals in a row, that's amazing. You know what I'm saying? That's big. Like, nobody ain't done that in our lifetime. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we ain't been watching the game. So, you know, they weren't a failure. You know,
I'm not calling it a failure. I'm just saying the fact that they had no flexibility because of what they were doing with that salary cap.
They didn't have any flexibility.
What could Pat do? How many people could he sign?
Once again, like I said, what I told you earlier, the luxury tax, we talk about it. Yeah, it's an issue, but it's an issue for small market teams. You know what I'm saying? For big market teams, it's just money. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but Mickey didn't want to pay it. He didn't pay it.
But this is why he tried to, because Miami was so good during their run. We just talked about how they went to four straight championships. They ran the East. They got two chips. They were so good. They tried to cut corners. I mean, it's still a business. They tried to cut corners that last year. You know, Mike Miller wanted a little bit more money. You know what I'm saying? He went to Memphis. You know, whatever. They had some guys make some different moves. But Shane Battier got tired. Yeah, a lot of things happened. His Spurs is better. But at the end of the day, when we look at when Pat Riley was destroying LeBron with his next contract, this is after he had to sign Josh McRoberts. This is after he had engaged Danny Granger the deal. This is after he had to make the move to bring Napier to Miami. You know, this is after, you know what I'm saying? But these moves were important because they already had it in once they got Bud, Bosh and Wade was going to come back. So now you was going to get better. You can't tell me you got Wade, Bosh, and Brun, and then you add Danny Granger and Josh McRoberts, and he's up. Now you're retooling. They still went to the finals again next year. Whether they won or not, we don't know. You know what I'm saying? It's all about how you playing at that time and injuries and guys are healthy and playing well, but they would have been to the finals again with that squad. So Pat Riley still was doing his due diligence. He still will put a squad around. It's just that Brian wanted to go home. Miami's still going to be in the playoffs. They still going to be straight. They ain't going to win the championship, probably not. And things are more wide open now. But with Chris Bosh and D-Wade and Josh McRoberts and Danny Granger, and now they got more money to go add another piece, they're going to be high. Matter of fact, they've been trying to get Lou Aldean or Paco Fowler signed all day. You know what I'm saying? So they're going to be straight anyway because Pat Riley is a good president of basketball operations. He always held Miami competitive.
I see your point. I just disagree. As great as Pat Riley is, I think this new CBA really restricted how much he could finagle with his team. Well, because of the money. As I said, Mickey Harrison didn't want to go over there.
$118 million.
Yeah, that doesn't affect their cap. I mean, the luxury tax, they're fine. I'm talking about when you were in contention and you had a chance to add players, you decided to roll with Battier another year. You decided to bring
That's
in Greg Oden. You decided to bring in Michael
That's
Bean. These were moves.
Anybody who has Wade, Bosh, and Brun, you're going to have to get a bunch of role players. You already spending $100 million to each of them players. You can't go get a whole bunch of other players. What do you think going to happen in Cleveland once they get to that max? Once they get to the salary limit, they're going to stop. They're going to have
There it is. That is the hidden part of this whole situation. After they figure out how they're going to put the team together in Cleveland, now the same thing we got to wait till the pieces fall into place. But
the pieces already fell in place. Because when
until it's signed, it ain't happened yet. In a couple years, Dan Gilbert will be in the same situation, hanging by
years.
The rope that he created, in that him and the other small business owners decided they wanted the CBA. So he's going to be limited the same way.
No, he's not going to be limited. For the fact that when LeBron left Cleveland, Cleveland was fired for 4 years in a row. They ain't made the playoffs since he left.
Yeah.
So what ended up happening, because the CBA already was had already been in Cleveland paper, because what ended up happening is Cleveland was so sorry, they ended up somehow getting three number one freaking picks and a whole bunch of lottery picks that you don't have to pay hardly no money to because of the old CBA where they got a rookie salary cap. So now you got all this young talent making no money.
Right, but you're going to have to use those pieces to get the pieces you want. So you probably keep one of them, but the other two are probably going to be gone. Out of Anthony Bennett, Deion Waiters, and Andrew Wiggins, you're going to lose at least two of those guys. You're only going to keep one at best. So they got to figure that out. And then after that, like I said, after a few years of contending, there's going to be roster moves need to be made.
See, because the good thing about the CBA, which is one reason why Pat Riley would have had no trouble signing LeBron, Bison, Wade back, is because the CBA allows you to sign your own players back because you have their bird rights. You can go over the salary cap with your own players without going into the luxury. See, that's the beautiful thing about it. So he could have signed them back. He could have signed those guys back without going into the luxury, but the other signers around him would have put them over the luxury, which, once again, they in Miami. That money on the is no big deal. It's not like Brooklyn did with $90 million. They paid $90 million in luxury tax. That's a hit. And they're not even tripping about it. You know what I'm saying?
Prokhorov got that bread, man. He ain't care. But what I'm trying to say is the small owners in the CBA, the thing that they really wanted to get across was they don't want dynasties anymore. Once you start winning chips, they want it to be harder for you to maintain and upgrade. And that's the stage that they have set. So after Cleveland becomes the contender now with Bron in a few years, all I'm saying is it's going to be harder to tweak the roster year to year.
For them.
So they got that part of the CBA, but now Dan Gilbert has to deal with the other side of it. There's a flip side to that coin, like the great Robert De Niro told Al Pacino in Heat.
Exactly. And just like any owner or any coach or any fan or anybody, what he has to hope for is he has to hope that Kyrie Irving game goes to another level. He has to hope that Bron, you know, can sustain. And he has to hope that if he do bring Kevin Love, then his game can go to another level. That way, when they come back to sign the players, he'll have their bird right. And they'll be good enough to where you can put some scrubs around them and they can still compete for championship. But like Bron said, it's hard to win a championship. It ain't going to be easy.
Bron and K-Love are going to be sick together. Bron and K-Love on that pick and pop and pick and roll, that's going to be devastating for the NBA to deal with in the next few years. Kyrie will be hitting so many open spot-up jumpers and also have the spacing that he's never seen before in his life, meaning at the top of the key with Bron on the wing and everybody favoring towards LeBron. He's going to have spacing that he's never had. And Kyrie's a hard dude to handle one-on-one, period. So, yeah, Cleveland, I mean, they set the stage, man. Now they just got to put it together, and we're going to see where it goes. But I'm shocked at this signing. Let's get into some more before we come back to LeBron. Bosch going back to Miami, like you said, for the max. Great deal for Bosch. To me, he's still if you want to rate stretch fours in the NBA, Bosch is 1A, Kevin Love is 1B. So Bosch is still good as hell and has the ability, if you can get a few games out of Wade in the series, where they can actually put Cleveland out. So, I mean, it's not a done deal out here.
It's not a done deal. I'm not going to say it's wide open, but it's more open.
Yeah.
I believe there are five teams in the East right now who are going to compete, you know, for over the next 3-4 years for that crown. You know, out of the East, I believe that's going to be Cleveland. I believe New York will end up eventually turning around. Miami is going to be good. Indiana's going to be good, and I'm going to have to add some more teams. So Indiana's going to be good. I believe the Hawks are going to be good. I like the direction that Washington is going in, and I like to tell people, look out for these two teams over the next period too, Philadelphia and Orlando. They got some nice things that they working on too as far as building a team that's going to be able to sustain for the long run. So,
they're building the right way that they're
East is coming along. It's slowly, you know, it's going to take a few years, but as a right, and I can't forget Chicago. So it's wide open more in the East, but as of right now, as of next year, it's really going to be just Chicago and Cleveland and maybe Miami. You know, Chicago, Cleveland, and Miami for the next year. Because,
well, Indy depended on what they do with Roy Hibbert and what they need
a point guard.
Badly.
If they can address their point guard situation, then that's what I was telling folks all last year, they didn't address their point guard situation. A guy like Jameel Nelson can help them great a whole bunch.
Yep.
They got issues up there in Indiana. You know, it's possible this thing in Indiana can crumble before they arrive.
Yeah.
So
and essentially, you're going to have to give up something to get rid of George Hill.
Exactly.
That's the point guard we're talking about.
They got to be careful how they, you know, come up with their roster this offseason because he already got, you know, they're trying to get Lance Stevenson. They offer him the boo-boo contract. He don't want to really sign it. The players on the team really don't want Lance Stevenson back. So, you know, but Larry Bird understands that he has a type of talent that he can help us get over the top, you know. So that's a dicey situation that they got going on in Indiana. They could end up letting a very good player go, you know, due to chemistry issues.
Yeah, and it would be a mistake to just let Lance walk anyway. Even if you have to re-sign him for 12 a year or 14 a year, whether, you know, if it gets ridiculous, even if you have to sign him for that and then move him, that's better than just letting him walk because Lance is too good of a player, man. That's an asset. You can't let him walk. Like you just brought up Philly and Orlando. What are both of those young teams doing? They're stacking assets up. And they're going to figure out who they want to keep and who they want to get rid of. But right now, you know, they're on the right pace. They're building the right way. Get these young boys in here and possibly a few veterans who somebody might want at the trade deadline or otherwise, and they're going to keep moving. But, they're doing it the right way. But, man, I want to see what this market for Lance turns into now that the big chip is off the board and that LeBron is gone. Somebody's going to step up and try to get Lance, and they should.
You know, the chips are falling, you know, now that LeBron has made the decision, the next decision that everybody was going to wait on is Melo, which is reportedly is between Chicago now and New York, but it's going to be New York. He's going to go back to New York. Then the next big chip is Pau Gasol, you know, where he's going to fall. Once Pau Gasol falls, then you're going to start seeing everybody fall. You're going to start seeing Lance Stevenson, the Greg Monroes. You know, guys like that are going to finally start to find their home. So, you know, it's good that LeBron got the ball rolling. And next week is going to be very interesting to see how teams start to really position themselves going forward.
What are your thoughts on my man from Phoenix? For some reason, I can't call his name. Played with John Wall at Kentucky. A little dynamic, athletic guard.
Are we talking about Young? Did they just draft him or somebody already got? Gordon Dragic?
Well, he was drafted to the Clippers, and then he got moved to Phoenix.
Aaron Bledsoe.
There we go.
Yeah.
I couldn't call his name for some reason.
Well, you know, Phoenix just signed Isaiah Thomas to a 4-year, $27 million deal today, which kind of got me scratching my head because I'm like, he's a point guard. You got Eric Bledsoe and you got Goran Dragic. Like, what's the deal? Like, you cluttered back there. Are they lining themselves up to make a move? You know, maybe we're trying to make a move with Minnesota to bring Kevin Love in. Are they going to move Goran Dragic? You know, are they going to move Bledsoe? So it's interesting. It's going to be interesting over the next week to see why are some of these teams making the moves they're making. You know, what do they got lined up?
I'm a fan of Bledsoe.
Bledsoe's a hell of a player, man. Hell of a player, hell of a talent. And as you saw last year, you know, when he was – see, he got hurt, but when he was healthy, I mean, Phoenix was playing above, you know, they level. You know, they was really a playoff-bound team. So, you know, his talent level is great. You know, other guys, and you know, general managers and guys who make decisions, they understand this. So, he's always going to be a hot commodity, right, especially right now while he's young and he's coming into his own.
Because,
see, this is what I've been trying to explain to people. The league is different now. You know, back when we were coming up, you know, guys got drafted, they were ready to play. You know, if you drafted Grant Hill in the first round, your team went from not making the playoffs to being in the playoff push, you know, to being in, you know, ticket things the next year. You know, you drafted Tim Duncan, y'all finna be good. You know, when you drafted Chris Webber, you know, guys, you drafted these guys, they're ready to play and contribute right away. Now we see a lot of guys get drafted, and I don't know how many times we say, dang, he just stayed in school two more years. He should have stayed in school three more years. But they got to have a draft. Somebody going to draft him on potential. Well, they get drafted, and they don't be ready. You know, you even seen guys get drafted lottery and be in the D-League. But now
I have no problem with that, though, because they're all rookie deals. You get a showcase time to see what this guy's about, see what kind of talent he has.
Well,
if you want
exactly.
to re-up him, you can. But if he ain't worth it, then, you know.
Well, see, that's getting my point where we in today's game. See, that wasn't happening back then. It wasn't no, we wait 3 years, and then, oh, he can't play. Or it wasn't none of that. It was we already know out of college the guy can play. You know what I'm saying? Like, he can't injure it. Mike derail his career, but for the most part, we know a guy can play or he can't. You know what I'm saying? Let him drive him out of high school. Now you got these guys early. You got to wait 3 years, 4 years for them to develop. So now the trick. The key for the general manager is to be able to find that guy who came out too early, who right now is just about to come into his game and try to implicate him to your roster. You know, like, for instance, Dallas, Brandon Wright came into his own last year. When he came out of North Carolina, he came out too early. He came out 2 years too early. But now we're seeing what Brandon Wright could be when we was watching him in North Carolina. Now Ed Davis is starting to flourish and become somebody. You're going to see some guys like that. Eric Bledsoe the same way, he came out too early, but now you're starting to see, okay, now I see why he was at Kentucky and why he was coming out too, why he came out after that first year. Because now he just came out too early, so you're going to see a lot of guys like that, and these general managers and these scouts got to be good enough to find those guys who just came out too early, but he really that dude. He just went that dude 3 years
ago. Bad scouts and GMs get exposed now. Because if you got a guy on the roster who you're giving minutes to and maybe he's putting up a little points and he looks better than what he is, if you're a good GM, you can flip that guy to somebody who thinks he's good and get something of actual value for it. So speculation is big now in the NBA because you got these young guys and, you know, somebody thinks he's something. Anthony Bennett right now. Most people are really low on Anthony Bennett. But, hell, who knows what that dude can become in a few years. But if you're Cleveland, you're selling somebody on the potential. Like, look, Anthony Bennett, he could be a player.
Exactly. He could be a player in 3 years. Maybe he will be. You know, you have a player like the Hawks just made a sign today. The Atlanta Hawks signed Kent Bazemore. Like, he's one of those guys who – you see, he got talent. He came out probably early, you know, for like back in the day, he wouldn't have came out. He could have came out. You know, he would have had to stay in school, but now you can come out. And after another year, like now, you can see why 3-4 teams were trying to sign the guy. He's young. He just
athletic
came out early. You see that he has potential that he can end up being a guy who can give you 15 to 20 points a night.
Yeah, and then the cap weighs in on that because if you're Golden State and you're saying, okay, we can't wait on this dude to show the potential that we're expecting from him. We tried to give him minutes. He's not showing he's ready yet, so we're going to let him go out to the market. And like you said, somebody like Atlanta's going to say, oh, well, we're going to go snap him up. We think we can do something with him. And that's how it's playing out right now, man, because, like you said, these guys are out here. You let somebody else develop them for 3 years, and then you pick them up.
Exactly.
It gets no better than that.
And you see a guy like Mike Scott, who was a restricted free agent with the Hawks. You know,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure the Hawks would love to get him back since the Hawks drafted him and developed him. But there's a market out there for Mike Scott right now. He may not want to come back and take the money that the Hawks were willing to offer him. He might get a bigger deal somewhere else. So, you know, and probably can go somewhere else and maybe start and be somebody, you know, a decent player. But that's those are just the type of guys you have to be looking for. And they, if you're in the league, you try to get a lot of those guys and stack them up because you don't have to pay that much for them just yet because they haven't really showed you that they are what you hope they are.
Right. And Mike Scott probably got on a lot of people's list in that Indiana series when he hit all those threes that game because then teams are like, oh, okay, we can get a cheap stretch guy. Hey, why not take a flyer on him?
There's no such thing as a cheap stretch guy. This is
what
I was saying to one of my homeboys earlier. There's no such – see, that's the reason why the Hawks might not can't get him back because there's no such thing as a cheap stretch guy in the league. You pay for guys who can do who can do what they can do, a big man who can step out and hit threes at a high percentage because guys are not stepping out and hit threes at a high percentage. And so, but when you look at the teams that are winning championships, they all got that stretch four. You know what I'm saying? So if you don't have it, you're not going to really, you know, compete for a championship. So they're a value commodity. There's a reason why the Hawks drafted Adrian Payne with their first pick because they might lose Mike Scott and they're going to want that other guy, that other stretch four who can hit the three, and that's what Payne can do. So,
those guys are very valuable. They don't compete. Right, it's a big gap on that in the what you're paying for and what you're getting. The Hornets paid Ryan Anderson way too much money, and now they're starting to regret that. But if you get Matt Bonner or Boris Diaw or somebody for one of those deals, then you've got your value. When Pop went to that Diaw lineup against Miami, that whole series was different. First two games were competitive, and after that?
I don't know if New Orleans regrets. You know, the deal they gave him for Ryan Anderson because they actually improved as a team. And next year, Pelicans are going to be a team that's probably going to be in the playoffs. They're going to make a very strong push because Anthony Davis is ready. They didn't understand that it was going to take a while for them to build that team in New Orleans. But then they understand that one of the pieces they was going to need was that stretch four. You know, and that's why they did what they did.
And this is another thing I want to put out there.
And we all got some good money, too.
He was at 10. He made 10.
Exactly. He ain't called the cheat.
Yeah.
You got to pay for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this is another thing I want to put out there for NBA fans, man. We spend so much time counting other people's money, talking about how much they make. I think a new way of looking at NBA rosters is to say what percentage of the cap is a person. So if you've got Al Horford on the Hawks, and you say he's 15% of your team's cap. You say, I think I can deal with that for Al Horford. But as you start to move through the different names and you put that percentage up there, then you'll start to see teams be a little more shaky. If you're the Detroit Pistons and you're paying 15% of your cap for Josh Smith and Josh is playing the three, that might not be value. You know what I mean?
Well,
I think that's one way to look at it.
That's one way to look at it, but when you're really trying to win a championship, that can be a tricky way of looking at it because you might not really get, like, the numbers are going to lie sometimes.
Yeah.
But sometimes, in order to win a championship, you just need a piece. And even though that player might not be worth X amount of dollars, that piece is, you know what I'm saying?
So
you're not really playing for the player, you're playing for the piece. And
yep.
So, you know, now when you look at Ross, you might say player XYZ, you know what I'm saying? He is this percentage of the cap, but he ain't really shouldn't be that percentage of the cap, but that's what they need to win a championship.
Right.
For our team,
that's good value. Right. Mm-hmm. So Dwayne Wade, the player he is right now, he's not as good as what Miami Heat or whoever, or the Bulls or whoever, where he goes, he's not as good as what he's going to get paid. But as far as for that financial situation of that team and that That straight money, what it comes down to, Dwayne Wade will pay off.
I don't know. What is not as good, you know?
Dwayne Wade is not Dwayne Wade. He missed
28 games, you know, and that was really because most of them just didn't want to play until they got to the playoffs. But when I look at his body of work and what the man did, like, the man was great. Like, the man had a great year. The man averaged over 20 a game. He shot a high percentage. I mean, he played smart. I mean, he was just playing with LeBron. Like,
I don't see him shooting that high percentage next year without LeBron on the court. He can't get to the basket as good as he used to. And defensively, he's horrible right now. Like, I'm just being honest about it.
I'm saying he still got to the basket. Well, he's a two guard. He's still a great two guard. He didn't have to do as much with LeBron out there. Now he's gonna have to do a little bit more with Chris Bosh out there. But now this is gonna be, I mean, it's still Wade's team, but it's gonna look like it's Chris Bosh's team. Bosh is gonna put in the work now.
He should be.
Bosh is gonna average 24 points. He's gonna average 9 to 10 rebounds. He's gonna average 4 or 5 assists. This is what Bosh's about to do next year, and they're gonna compete. But Wade's still gonna get healed.
Yeah, but like I said, this is the first time he's ever dealt with one-on-one coverage. There was nobody sliding coverage to him. People were treating him like a regular guy. So, this is a different situation, man. Those knee problems, man, they've taken the careers of Penny Hardaway. I mean, countless people we've seen their careers change.
Both straight championships.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
that's another factor, too.
I think D-Wade has been great the last 4 years. I mean, they went to both straight chips. He did his part.
Last two has been a little different. But, I mean, to play that much basketball, you never
know.
He
averaged over a dub. Look at what he averaged in the playoffs.
He did average over a dub, but I watched those games, too. And
I saw a guy who was struggling.
And
he was shooting at a high. And I watched it, and I was like, dang. Wade looked good. He's still at a high percentage. He's making the right play every time. He's playing good with another great. See, it's hard. Some players can't play good with other great players. Wade showed that he can play good with other great players.
Ray Allen is a prime example of that. People were complaining about how maybe he's not as good a shooter as we thought he was. Well, no, he's used to getting so many touches and so many shots. It's a little harder to find a way to fit in. But, no, I make that argument based off of they had to take him off of Danny Green in the series last year because he couldn't stick with him because of the knee. This year I see him out there. He can't stay in front of Ginobili, let alone Tony Parker or somebody if he gets switched. He's constantly calling for help. It's hard to move laterally, man.
But who can stay in front of all those guys you named? Who can stay in front of those guys?
Dwayne Wade of 2 years ago.
Nah, he can do what he can. I mean, don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong, he's not the defensive player he used to be. His body is breaking down. I'm not disagreeing with that. But when I'm looking at the results of what he did, especially on the offensive end, I didn't really see a drop off.
He's so smart, man. He can manufacture shots. He can get fouls. I mean, he's still,
so
like
as long
said,
as he
still a Hall of Famer.
Him and Bosh, is that as long as he healthy? And look, as long as he's healthy, he's still better than down the era two guard in the league. Give me this.
Over under on him playing 50 games next year.
50? Oh, he'll play over 50.
Think he'll play over 50? Okay.
He'll play over 50. He missed 28 this year, so he played over 50 this year. So I say he'll play over 50 next year. But, you know, he's going to miss some games, but Bosh showed that when, you know, they weren't playing, he held it down.
Hey, man. Bosh is, as much as people hate on Chris Bosh is a good player and a future Hall of Famer.
There's a reason why he just got 5 years, $118 million, and there was another team offering him $88 million. There's a reason why. He went for the take chunk change this summer.
Shout out to Chris Bosh in Ghana right now, chilling in Africa, doing the damn thing, signing a max contract.
He gonna get more than Brian again.
Yeah, yeah. again, LeBron James will not be the highest paid player in the NBA next year. So there's that. And somebody, I can't think of the writer, so please forgive me. He posted something today. NFL free agency, highest guaranteed money, $27 million. NBA, $121 million, Chris Bosh. The differences out here are staggering. For the game that's the number one in America, which is football, and a game that is second only to soccer in the world, and that is basketball. Basketball is a global sport now. That's why LeBron's going to the World Cup tomorrow. He knows what he's doing. That's not just an outing he's taking.
Exactly. And that's why he made his decision today, so he wouldn't have to be interrupting Messi and Argentina in the World Cup. Like, well, let's get you on with today. And then we can focus on the World Cup, you know, tomorrow, and then we can get the Melo whenever, because, you know, it don't really matter. But, you know, it was good that he went on ahead and got that done today.
Hell yeah. I guess we got the Hornets trying to test the Jazz and the idea that they're going to match anything for Hayward. How do you think that one plays out? You think the Hornets you think the Jazz match, or you think Gordon's going to Hayward? I mean, Gordon's going to Charlotte Hornets, not Bobcats. I keep messing that up.
Well, if the Utah Jazz are serious about, you know, ever trying to get back to the playoffs, which I'm pretty sure they are because that's their tradition. They ain't usually been the low team in the league. You know, they're not a fire franchise. You know, Jazz are one of the more respectable franchises in the league. So, you know, and Gordon Hayward is their type of player. He's a white player who has some skills, you know. And he's been in Utah. He has a relationship there. I just think it'll be in Utah's best interest to match a deal, you know, and to bring him back. But at the same time, it might be hard to match that deal, you know. Y'all think about their future, you know, with Chancellor, with Favors, and you got Trey Burks, and then, you know, you just made a couple picks in this year's draft that going forward. I mean, right now you're straight, but going forward, you might have some other things to look at. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. I think Utah will end up signing them back because really, he's the best player they got on the team.
We're scraping the bottom of the barrel, y'all. We're talking Utah Jazz and Charlotte Hornets. Looks like we got King James on the line. Fantasy football genius, Cowboys fan extraordinaire. James, are you there?
I am here. What's going on, fellas?
You know what it is, man. Well, we're just talking NBA free agency. You missed earlier when we were talking LeBron, so please, sir, come in. Your thoughts, LeBron James, back to Cleveland.
Well, I was kind of surprised about it a little bit, but then after hearing the reports and stuff, I was like, okay. His whole family wanted to go back to Ohio. His wife probably wanted to get him away from them mamacitas down there. his mama was staying in too much trouble down there. So, and then his boys and stuff, their wives probably wanted to go too. So,
a lot of competition in Miami. I could understand it being tough on a relationship where the women are like, yeah, we need to go back home. Yeah. I could understand that happening. Do you see it being tough for LeBron to build there, or do you think with those pieces that they have that they could put together a contender next year?
Well, I felt like the fix was in anyway.
Here we go with the conspiracy. Go ahead.
I felt like the fix was in with calm Dan Gilbert down. They probably was like, we'll let y'all build a team up and then let LeBron win a couple championships and then he can come back home and stuff. So they got the last three out of four number one picks in the overall draft. Got it this year. LeBron coming back home.
Jay, let me speak to the other side of that before you get finished, because I had this conspiracy argument with a few people.
Go ahead.
I think we might have just lost Nas for a second.
Okay.
But I believe that he was going to say on the conspiracy thing that there's no way that they conspired to get 3 number 1 picks. Now, what I will say is, oh, I can't speak for Nas on this, but something happened while they were gone. Like, there's no way you get 3 number 1 picks. I think Lee was doing Dan Gilbert a favor. You know, you lost LeBron. We're going to give you this and help him win, but they ain't never win. They still were sorry. So it's just fortunate that they're going to get Brian back, and now they got 4 number 1 picks on their roster right now. You know, but I don't I don't think they necessarily conspired to get it that way. I just think that's the way it worked out, you know. And maybe Dan Gilbert had a plan that, okay, we'll just get these picks, and then maybe I can get LeBron to come back in 5 years, and we'll have a lot of flexibility, because we'll have a lot of young players that we can either move or maybe they'll get better. So maybe he was smart on that end, you know, they didn't fire the general manager a couple of times.
The only thing I have to say about that is I go back 4 years and I'm like, Dan Gilbert didn't come up with that. And I'm going to tell you why Dan Gilbert didn't come up with that. After he did that rant, he posted that letter, he was thinking short term. He didn't think long term. Okay, maybe he'll go get some rings and come back. If you were thinking long term, all that stuff, if you were thinking long term, you wouldn't have been snap the way he did.
He was rallying the base with that. He was rallying those angry, bitter Cleveland fans, and he knew what buttons to push in that letter. And that's what that letter did. They cherished that letter, loved that letter, because they felt like he cared. So, I mean, he manipulated the hell out of the Cleveland population with that letter. Great hustle on his part on that.
Exactly. I don't necessarily agree with Dan Gilbert because just the fact he's the owner, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, because if I'm looking at it from his perspective, I understand exactly why he wrote the letter. And how he felt about it. You know what I'm saying? I can understand that. And bygones are bygones. We move forward. But that's just one day. He wrote that letter in one day. He didn't live the last 4 years based on that one day. You move forward.
Yeah,
you know?
A man of his business acumen shouldn't be writing letters like that. If a deal falls through for a casino, he understands deals go bad. He doesn't write the other CEO a letter and
saying
different stuff about him.
I'm
he
not
knows
saying
he's
right.
So bad.
I'm saying that.
He was
I'm
using
not
that.
Right.
No,
right.
I'm just saying he
no,
was
I'm
using that for the
family.
Hold on, real quick. Let me jump in here real quick. Did y'all watch the Summer League game tonight? Cleveland?
I've seen
Dave
Martin get dunked on.
Yeah.
Well, I watched it tonight and stuff, and I saw Anthony Bennett out there. He looked like a totally different player out there. They had Dan Gilbert out there as well. They spoke to him. He's trying to clean it up. Talking about, I know them we had relationship 5 years. That was just one night and whatever. Do y'all feel like he needs to come out and make a public apology for what he did 4 years ago?
No.
Yeah. I would. If I was LeBron, I would want one. I would want that public apology.
Yeah, you don't need that. That's LeBron is more mature than that. He's a man now. He got the positive face to face from that man before, you know what I'm saying, he made the deal. That's all that matters. The owners are the same. It don't matter if he's Mickey Harrison, it don't matter if it's Dan Gilbert, it don't matter if it's Donald Sterling. He gotta play for somebody. It don't matter. All that's stuff for us. We care about that stuff. I don't care about it, but like a lot of like casual fans care about that stuff. Don't nobody care about that letter. That letter was 4 or 5 years ago. That's in the past. That's water under the bridge. He's still about to give that man $100 million to play basketball. It's still the same. He's still looking at LeBron the same way. LeBron is a player. He's a worker. He's an employee. I'm an owner. I'm a billionaire. LeBron ain't gonna never touch what I got. He always gonna be that way. Ain't nothing changed. So, you know, LeBron can't be worried
I'm not saying this guy has to have a change of heart or change who he is. I'm just talking about just in the sense of respect that you owe me that apology. You made
it
public.
Gave it for him.
$100 million. No. But you didn't give me $100 million. You're paying me that because I earned that. But
no, he's saying that because he want to give it to him to come play basketball.
No. This is what I'm saying. I don't want a private apology for something you did in public to me. I want a public apology.
But he did apologize publicly.
He did. I want to get caught up in this letter because I want to touch on James's point too. The idea of Cleveland getting all those draft picks. This is where I differ from the people saying conspiracy. If I'm Tom Benson, or if I'm the other guy in Milwaukee who just paid $300 and $400 million for NBA franchises, why the hell would I sit back and say it's okay for you to divert all the draft picks to this guy over here? That's the part where that kind of falls apart. You got a small market team, and you're gonna give them all the draft picks. For one, we had the Celtics and Lakers in this draft. If you're gonna fix a draft, you need to get one of those major markets like that. And the other thing, like I said, if you got these owners so invested in these teams, why the hell would they allow somebody else to reap all the benefits when they paid too?
Hold on. Celtics came up in this draft. The Hawks passed on the player they should have got, James Young, and let the Celtics.
No, the Hawks didn't pass on the player they should have got. They got the player they should have got, and Adrian Payne, because Warren was gone. And that's who the Hawks got, who they should have got.
I would have taken another guy instead of Payne.
James Young from Kentucky is going to be a much better player than Adrian Payne.
I like James Young, though, so that's why I'm a James Young fan.
It's about fit. It ain't about I like James Young, too, but
he fit
about,
exactly
it's
what
about fit. No, he don't. He might not. Obviously, Coach Bud and Danny Ferry didn't think he would fit the system better than Adrian Payne, and they know more about the system than Aaron one of us, so I'm agree with their pick right now on that.
Beyond the system, it's a safer pick. You're saying this is a guy who plays in our way. He's coming from Michigan State, so we know he won't have a problem rebounding. He's been coached by Izzo. We know what type of guy we're getting. But the potential of James Young is much higher. So, I mean, it's a safer pick.
That's the worst key word in the world, potential. And you got potential to be great. You got potential to be a player.
It's the worst or the best, one or the other, It could be the worst.
I think Adrian Payne is more of a sure thing. The man played at Michigan State with Izzo. The man is more positive and ready to go. I mean, it's clear to me which one is ready to go. Now, James Young is more of a project, but I like him. I ain't knocking him. I do like his talent.
Yeah.
But I think right now for the Hawks, you're trying to build in this system, Adrian Payne is a better fit.
James Young can be as good as James Harden or be as lackadaisical as J.R. Smith. You don't know which way it's going to go.
That ain't what we need. We're only down one of them.
You don't know which way it's going to go.
James Young can be the best Paul George or better.
I would have took him. Hey, I'm James. I'm with you. I would have took him, personally.
I would have took him before I took Adrian Payne every day.
Yeah, I'm with you on it. But, I mean, you know, it's not a pick I can knock, though. Because it's a guy who fits your system.
No, you can't knock
it. He can play.
But Adrian Payne going to play defense, too. Right now.
He's going to play D and rebound. That Michigan
and
State
shoot,
stuff
and
don't change.
And shoot the three.
For the last 10 years.
Let me tell you something, man. If you're a college student and you get up every day and go to practice with Tom Izzo and you do that shell rebounding drill that they do, you're a man. Ain't no little boys in that shell rebounding drill at Michigan State, bro.
The Hawks are sort of reminding me of how San Antonio would draft. You know how San Antonio would draft. I mean, they've been very successful, so you can't knock how they do it because they get players who are ready to play and contribute right away. And that's what they did with Adrian. Just like what you see with San Antonio, how the hell they got Kyle Anderson at number 29 beat me. You know what I'm saying? When you got Zach LaVine, who wasn't even starting, who coming off the bench get drafted lottery. And Kyle Anderson was a freaking man on the team and can clearly ball, but he goes 29 San Antonio, and there's a reason why San Antonio has been the most successful franchise in the league over the last 20 years. Because they just get it, man. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I would say two reasons.
They draft guys who are ready to fit into the system right now. Patty Mills, I'm looking at all last 2 years. I'm like, why ain't nobody draft Patty Mills? Why the hell has nobody got this man over here busting ass in the World Championships against Kobe, everybody, and Booty Dukes, the Spurs, signed to them. I'm like they signed the guys who are no-brainer ball players. You know, but everybody looking for this young guy who got potential who might not do nothing. He got potential to be nothing. Where's Kemba Walker at right now? You know what I'm saying? That's all I be saying. I like when teams have a plan, a blueprint, they get it, and they put them in there and they're going to win chips. That's what I want. That's why I'm glad that they got Adrian Payne.
The Spurs are kind of running into something different now because everybody took their model of drafting guys overseas and bringing them over later. So they don't have that advantage anymore because, I mean, they used that advantage to get Ginobili
but
and Tony Parker.
They
were ahead of the game on that.
Tony Parker came and played. When they drafted Manu Ginobili, they ain't stashed him. Ginobili came and played.
I'm talking about the majority of those guys, they ended up stashing. Those two were able to come over and play, but they were able to get those guys late in the draft because people didn't want
to
wear how good they were.
We have to understand why.
What did they get Tony Parker, 21? I think they had Tony Parker at 21.
Tony Parker was 18 when he came
to
the league.
No, I'm talking about the 21st pick.
Oh, he
got him at like 21.
He was number 28. In the 2018.
Yeah. Like a guy like that falling that far because other teams weren't as good scouting across the world as the Spurs were.
You're right. That's my whole point. They're a great scout. Yeah. And when they did stash picks, they weren't stashing picks. They weren't stashing picks just for the sake of stashing picks. They stashed picks because they didn't like nobody in the freaking draft. I'm not going to do that.
They stashed Splitter for a few years, and what's the other guy on Indiana, the big who they ended up trading? Louis Scola. They drafted Scola too. So I mean, they were always finding guys, man. The other teams didn't even know about or didn't value enough.
And that's what you do.
Let's check this out though. When you tank your season so you get Tim Duncan, all you got to do is just pitch Parse around.
Oh, come on, man. David Robinson had a broke back or something. He was hurt bad.
Man, they had a team that was good enough to win more games than they won.
They were good enough to win more games if David Robinson came back, but when David Robinson got healthy, he decided not to come back so that they could get a good graphic. But you didn't know they were going to get that one. Boston tanked that year, too. Boston was sure they were going to get some back.
Boston had two lottery picks, and Rick Pitino didn't get it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so we can't be saying that. They got Tim Duncan. That's their one player.
And Rick Pitino says to this day, if he could do it differently, he would have waited until after the draft lottery before he took that Boston job. Because when they did that number one pick, he was ready to go back to college.
They did a better job than Perry did with LeBron. That's what they did. They got Tim Duncan, and they put the parts around They did a better job than what Dan Perry did when he had LeBron. So they went out there, they did their thing. They've been picking their player, but for the Hawks, I mean, Adrian Payne, I thought he was a good player, but
all Dennis Terry did while he was in Cleveland won 60 games every year. I mean, LeBron just didn't get it done at the end of the day.
Danny Ferry didn't get it done either. I can't put that all on LeBron. Danny Ferry didn't get it done either. They both failed in Cleveland. LeBron encouraged him to re-sign Big Z. He encouraged him to sign Larry Hughes. So LeBron had some say in some of that personnel move, those personnel moves that didn't work out. But if you're the GM, the buck stops with you. So Danny Ferry failed as well. I can't put that on either one.
I didn't say Danny Ferry. I didn't say that. I'm gonna say he failed. I say he didn't. He didn't get the championship done. When you win six as a general, that's the reason why Danny Ferry ain't lost a job since he's been in Cleveland. Because he's been anywhere he go, they've been successful. They win 60 games.
Pull up that starting lineup of that Cleveland team against the Spurs that year they went to the finals. We talking about Ira Nubu. We talking about Eric Stone.
Yeah, I know what they had.
So, I mean.
But at the same time, look at the kind of player LeBron was. LeBron wasn't the same player he is now. LeBron is elite years better than he was back then. He didn't have no jumper. He can't hit a pull-up jumper. He didn't have a three. All he had was a drive to the hole real strong and yam on somebody. So he had a different skill set. If
he wasn't as good, but LeBron now could win a chip with that team.
The first time he played the Spurs,
I'll tell you right now, Michael Jordan wouldn't win a chip with that team.
Well, Michael Jordan only won 32 games his first year in the league, so he struggled too. He had to go through it too. So let's not even. It took him 7 years, and he got swept 3 years before he finally could get over the hump. So let's not jump on his nuts right now. Let's hold on for jumping on his nuts. Like he never got
that's
his ass whooped. He's getting his ass whooped all the time. But with LeBron's case, when they played the Spurs the first time, all the Spurs did was fall the lane and make him shoot pull-up jumpers, which he couldn't do. If they tried to play LeBron that same way today, he would destroy them. That team he was playing with allowed them to do that, though.
That was a bad team. That's one of the worst teams to ever make the finals.
No, we can't see. Once again, you keep talking like, no, this Miami Heat probably ever was one of the worst teams to ever make the finals. If you look at the numbers, they got beat by a total of 57 points. The worst in NBA history. They got beat by a differential of 57 points with Wade, Brown, and Bosh. That's the worst in NBA history. If you want to go stats,
that team I'm talking about got swept.
The Miami Heat has got their ass whooped worse than anybody else who's ever played in the NBA Finals. That's a fact.
Yeah, point differential
okay,
does not
so
determine.
Not
no, that, that does not determine team, though, because they won the game.
Okay,
that Cleveland
okay,
team I'm talking about
I'm
got
saying,
swept.
They didn't get their head whooped by 50-some points. They won the game because you know they screwed up game two. They probably get swept this year. They won the game because you know
they
screwed up game two.
But they
did. That's
a big difference.
Okay,
that's
I'm saying. They didn't screw up. They didn't screw up back then. They just swept them. You know, so they didn't screw up. Pop didn't make
yeah,
no bad decisions. But they got the hand with
If you're going to say Ginobili screwed up, you also have to say LeBron dominated that game down stretch. You also have to say that.
He did.
You can't just say one side.
LeBron had a great final. He didn't lose with this final. It ain't his fault. They lost. I ain't never
right.
It ain't his fault. He balled his ass off.
Yeah.
I didn't even do. Daddy ain't all them other role players and stuff up this year.
It didn't matter. They couldn't get stopped, period. It didn't matter what they did. They, no matter what lineup Spoelstra threw out there, they could not get
the
stopped.
Whole point
so
is,
it didn't matter.
You make it to the finals like we discussed earlier. Even though they got their ass whooped in the finals, even though they lost two finals, they still were a successful team for them 4 years. They still went to 4 straight championships. They still had successful days this year. They dominated the East. They still went to the finals. You can talk
yeah,
all
they're
about
legends
all
without
you
back
can talk
to back
all that
on their
Danny
resume.
Ferry failed in Cleveland
yeah.
to vote. You can talk that, but how many teams are winning 60 games a year? How many teams get to the finals? Danny Ferry helped them do that. Like, we can talk failure, but they didn't win a championship.
I think you put anybody in that team, they do the same.
But how many teams are winning 60 games every year? That's
you put LeBron James on that team? Just about anybody?
Miami are winning 60 games every year. They didn't win a 60-game game.
That's because they were maintaining. Regular season wasn't nothing to them. But they also had a 27-game winning streak while he was there.
Yeah, but they what is that?
Yeah.
We've seen teams in the last 5 years on that same winning streak. They do not know what Jordan, and that you break a record. And then we talking about you did something joint that you won 7-2 games. I don't want to hear it because you won more games in Cleveland over a 3-year stretch than you did in Miami. That's a fact. Look it up.
Wait, man, I'm glad you brought that up. Will we see that 72 game? Are we going to see that in the next 10 years, that 72 game record broken?
No, because guys ain't hungry like that no more, man. Those guys, when you talk about Jordan, Rodman, Pippen, Kukoc, Fields, those guys were
the
hungry,
the expansion teams helped, too. We got to add that. They got to play Toronto and Vancouver.
Yeah, but still, guys just don't want to lose. No night. We see you just talked about right now. These guys don't care about regular season games. Jordan cares about every regular season game. I want to win every game. I don't never want to lose. So the 10 times they lost, them 10 games, somebody had to really beat them. They didn't start with them because Jordan set out. No, they just got beat 10 times. Jordan never wanted to lose. He took the regular season seriously.
And as good as Miami was this last 4 years, we didn't see anything like that. We didn't see them put up a regular season like that.
Exactly.
That was dominance on a whole nother level. I remember those days of seeing Pippen and Jordan on the break, getting so many dunks and putting teams out of the game by the third quarter and sitting for the fourth. I mean, they really did a job on the league, man, that year. Yeah, that was something to see. I'm glad I got to see that part of greatness. And I'm so worried about fans now who seem to be so scared of greatness. I don't understand this idea of hating greatness. If Seattle comes out and is the best defense in the NFL next year, I want to see it. When New England was undefeated in 07, I wanted to see it. I want to see greatness. So, you know what I mean? Whoever puts their team together after this free agent season and they're great in the NBA, I want to see that. I'm not going to hate because somebody put together a stacked team. I say that's good management. Do what you can. So I don't get that notion.
I mean, teams, if you go back in the history of the league, what team outside of, I mean, really, and even if you want to add Detroit, I can go and add Detroit, but Detroit might be the exception. Who didn't have a stacked team? All the great teams have been stacked. Jordan, when they were winning, he had three Hall of Famers playing with him. First ballot.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You look at Detroit, they had three first ballot Hall of Famers. Boston, Hall of Famers. Lakers, Hall of Famers. Philadelphia, Hall of Famers. All across the board. Miami, Hall of Famers.
The only team who don't fit that description, like we talked about before, is that Detroit Pistons team in 04. And did they win mostly because Kobe and Shaq were feuding or because they were so great?
The 94 Houston Rockets.
I don't know who Rashid or Chauncey, maybe, but I don't think they're gonna have a Hall of Famer on that.
If Rashid don't go, it'd be a while. That's just because he made a lot of enemies.
Yeah, Rashid has Hall of Fame talent, but I don't think he'll get in just because he wasn't a scorer.
Bill Hamilton probably make it, and Chauncey probably make it.
I don't think Griff's going to make it. Chauncey got a shot. Oh, I can't see
Chauncey got a shot. See, none of those guys are for show. You know what I'm saying? Like, when Jordan was playing, we already knew. Jordan in, Pip in, Rodman in. You know what I'm saying? We already knew. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They were great. Well, like, Chauncey might, like we said, Chauncey might make it. Real, I doubt it. Rashid had the talent to do it. I don't know how they going to feel about, you know, he didn't really put up numbers. You know, to really, you know, get it done like that, you know, I just don't know if they're going to put them guys in, but they had a lot of solid players on the roster.
They were perfect defensively. That was the most perfect defensive team I've ever seen. And
like
that you have Ben Wallace playing the center.
They had 5 20-point games. They had 5 20-point game scores on their team. And then,
more than the scoring, though, it was that D, man, because Ben Wallace could guard any center one-on-one. He played the pick and roll perfectly. Rashid played the post on any big man. Even Tim Duncan played the best he ever.
He locked down anybody.
You
couldn't
beat the Lakers without no scores. They had guys on the floor that they had to defend every single play down the court.
Yeah.
You had to guard
it for 24 seconds because they were going to run their offense because they shared the ball.
Rip averaged 25 a game that year.
Yeah.
I mean, so they had
that's
a guy. You know, they were tough. They were very tough. But they were built on defense. That's where they made they name it, on defense. But yeah, they could put the ball in the hole. Rashid was the key that helped get them over the hump because they needed somebody
to
in the front
court.
Exactly, they needed somebody in the front court who can help, who can put the ball in the hole on a consistent basis, and that's what he was able to do.
Yeah, shout out to them, man. I like watching those 0-4 Pistons as much as they fouled the hell out of everybody, too.
Well, I put an asterisk on that year, though, man. I don't really like to get on credit for that chip because it's so sad that they weren't playing the best team in the West that year. The Lakers weren't the best team in the West. The Lakers were the third best team in the West that year. But because the NBA had lost so much money the year before with the San Antonio Nets series, they had to put the Lakers back in the finals to get them ratings up. And they did that. But San Antonio was better than the Lakers that year, and Minnesota was better than the Lakers that year. That was the year San
Cassell. Hey, they put them both out, man. You got to give it up to them. They put them out.
Sam Cassell got, I'm saying, I mean, things happened, whatever happened, happened, but Sam Cassell got hurt in the playoff. His back went out. They had to start Derrick Martin. That threw everything off. And then we already know what happened with the San Antonio Lakers thing. So at the end of the day, the Lakers were the third best team in the West, and they were going against the best team in the East. They didn't have a shot at winning the championship.
And Kobe and Shaq were not getting along. We got to add the most important part. Kobe and Shaq were not getting along at the time.
That's part of the reason why they won the best team in the West. They shouldn't even been in the championship. But the league had to recoup from all the money they had lost the year before.
So that the Lakers would be in the finals?
I don't think so.
Well, they had Karl Malone.
They were going for a three-peat. They were the team.
He just had too many stars on that team for the league not to take advantage of putting them in the finals. Like, it was a no-brainer. It could put San Antonio back in there again. Detroit didn't have no stars. How are you going to sell the finals of San Antonio and Detroit? You couldn't do it.
They did it the next year, and it was a good-ass final.
You're right. They did it next year because they had to. They had to go back to playing basketball. You already made it.
It was a good-ass final. Hey, do y'all remember Rashid leaving Robert Horry in, what was it, Game 5 or Game 6, which changed that series around? Detroit might have gotten two. Robert Horry comes off the bench, 20 points.
They might have got two. Series anyway.
But we didn't get all the way off topic in here, man. So we're gonna close this out in a minute, man. But I guess
I could go on and on about the Lakers, man.
What's up?
I could go on and on about the Lakers about how they won the best team and they kept going to the finals.
Hey, man, y'all the greatest franchise in NBA history, man. I give them that over the Celtics now. I think the Lakers have made that leap. I think it's the Lakers then Celtics now.
Who got most championships?
What'd you say?
Who got more chips?
I won.
The Lakers are 17, Celtics 16, right?
No.
Celtics 17.
Is 16 apiece?
No,
17. No, Celtics got one more chip than the Lakers do.
Oh, okay. I thought they caught them that last
one. They still are the lead.
I still give it to the Lakers just because it is. Half of the Celtics championships were in the early era before this thing became this global NBA what it is. As far as what we know the NBA to be, the Lakers have been the signature franchise. I consider them the Yankees.
I mean, that's part of the legacy, though. That's part of the history. That's part of the NBA. You can't have the history of the NBA without the Celtics. That's why they franchise is so historic and great, because of the what they did back in the day. And when they were doing all that, guess who they were knocking off? The Lakers. The Lakers
every year. Every year.
Exactly. The Lakers could have had that history. But see, another thing here, the Celtics was in Boston. The Lakers moved from Minnesota. So when you're looking at it from that aspect, Boston been a staple. You know, and I'm not a Boston fan. Now there's a lot of racial stuff in Boston that I'm not cool with. But being objective about it and thinking about the franchise, Lakers is up there. I admit, like you say, they could be the best. They've only missed the playoffs six times in all the years of being a franchise. But Boston got more championships and a longer history.
Yeah, Boston is at 17. The Lakers are at 16. But as I said, the majority of Boston, you're talking about half, more than, well, yeah. Yeah, half are in that early era. And the Lakers kicked it up there. I'm going to go Lakers. You can go Celtic. It's all good anyway. And remember, only four teams, Celtics, Lakers, Bulls, and Spurs, have won multiple championships. That's how tough it is in the NBA as far as franchises. The Bulls have six, the Spurs have five.
And Pistons.
Well, the Pistons got three.
That's most.
So, I mean, that's still a different tier. You know what I mean? That Bulls and Spurs sitting on six and five, that puts them in another era. The Pistons have three with Golden State, Miami,
and Philly. Not really, because the Bulls and Spurs, they won their stuff just like the Pistons won their stuff. They won their stuff in the same era. The Spurs didn't win their
stuff. Yeah, but it's the modern era, though. That's why I'm giving them that credit. Like, the Pistons, Golden State,
Pistons,
Miami, and Philly are all tied with three.
Well, I don't know. Spurs are one of those different eras. But the Spurs won their first ship in the 99. Yeah, 98, 99. They just won one in 2014. Like, that's a
15-year gap. And that's proof of Tim Duncan as the best player of this era. As good as Kobe Bryant is, I got to give it to Tim Duncan.
Exactly. Tim Duncan is one chip away from being arguably the greatest player to ever play the game.
Hey, he's in the running, man.
He's in
the running.
To me, that's good enough.
Yep. Once you're in that rarefied air, that's good enough. When you talk about Mike Russell, Tim Duncan, Will,
exactly.
You talk about those guys, you're one of the greats.
He went one more chip. He goes into that room with those guys.
Mm-hmm. The great Tim Duncan, shout out to him, man. Pulling it off again. I think they have no shot of winning it next year, but.
You say what? They got no shot. They're the favorite.
I don't think they'll do it.
Man, they're the favorite. And if they get Pau Gasol, it's a wrap. You can go ahead and just don't even play next year. Just get them chill. And everybody contract move up a year.
Well, they ain't won back-to-back yet. So let's see.
Pau Gasol, it's over with. So, yeah. I can give them that.
They ain't won a back-to-back yet, so we'll see.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. That's the yet. That's the yet part. But they've been in the thick of things for 15 years straight.
Yes. Timmy, man. Timmy is that dude.
They've been contending for a title for 15 years straight. That's great. Even if they don't win, there's no failure in that. It's all success. You've been in the thick of things for 15 years straight. How many? I can't say the Hawks been in that 1 year. We ain't been in the thick of things damn year. So if I can just be in that, as a Hawks fan, we just want to be in the thick of things 1 year. We want to really just feel like we got a shot to win 1 year. They've been doing this for 16 years straight.
Yeah.
That's great. That's no failure in that. Even when you lose, you don't fail if you was in the thick of things at the end of the day.
Yeah. I agree, and I think just the way the sports world is 24/7 now, we got into this culture where if you don't win a chip, it's a failure, and you know nothing can be further from the truth, man. Nothing can be. If you're a contention, you build a team to win, and you're up there, and you're out there playing for high stakes, and you've done what you've done. You're not gonna win every year. That's just the way the game goes. But, Spurs are great. Shout out to them for the great finals, man. So any parting shots you guys want to lay out before we get out of here?
Yeah, I need somebody's email address so I can go and get ready for my fantasy. Go on, prove somebody that
so
I am the fantasy genius. Huh?
You got to get an email for the league or mine?
You still got the same email address, right?
Yeah. I'm send it again. I'll respond to it.
Okay.
Send me your email address so I can send you an invite to the league, and I'm going to send you my email address so you can send me an invite to y'all league. So I ain't going to win any chips, man.
That's what I'm talking about.
So you the real fantasy king here.
He talking shit off the rip,
I'm a champion. You know what I'm saying?
I'm
a champion.
I'm a champion.
You're the second.
He's the champion. I'm the king. I've been trying to get his email address since last week because I guess I sent the text to the wrong number now.
No, I got it. I got the email before. I just didn't sign up for it. So I'm going to sign up, man. We good. I'm going to jump in there. So we good, though. But, yeah, man, it's speaking like you think. This is the first show in a long time. James, yeah, go ahead with your party shot, bro. Man.
Yeah. I'm winning all fantasy this year. I'm being four leagues. I'm winning them all. Write it down.
Slap down the domino then, man. He said he winning all four, like Moses Malone. What you got, Naughty?
Man. Well, always, as far as the point shot go, man, you know, it's onemanca.com all the time, man. I'm about to start back shooting the Controversial Truth as a TV show, you know what I'm saying? So I'm going to be getting up with y'all, man, you know, so we can get together on location once I figure out location so we can shoot this thing as a debate show like we used to do it back in the day. So everything getting back on track as far as that goes. So, you know, look out for that on onemanca.com. As far as the fantasy go, man, I usually play in two leagues. But I'm going to go ahead and do three leagues this year just so I can go wreck James Levy, you know what I'm saying, and win this championship. But, of course, everybody already know that the WCF is the toughest league in the nation to win. So you're in that nation, and if you're in that league and you can win, that's big because you got to really know your football to be in our league. You got to know who the fifth, third guy is on the roster.
Well, I'm about to see how tough your competition is
because
I got it. I doubt it.
The talk is deep going out here. We're going to see what that league looks like and what this NFL looks like. But this first speaking like you think it's been a long time. We're going to try to get them back coming soon. But go to onemancave.com, check Naughty out. And that's one O-N-E or that's the number?
The number one, mancave.com.
OneManK.com, check him out. And, yeah, man, we're going to see how this plays out, man. I'm getting in both of them leagues. I'm going to try to steal a win from both of y'all while y'all worried about it. So we're going to see how it goes, man. But thank y'all for calling in tonight, man. Short notice. Hell, LeBron signed. Why not do a show?
Exactly. I enjoyed it. All good.
Yeah, well, that's what's up, man. Good talking to y'all, man. And we up out of here.
Hey, when you catch recording, hold on 1 second. Just catch recording.
All right.
Oh,
man, it ain't responding, man. I just hit you on the phone, Jay.
Okay, send me Naughty email address, and I'll send him my.
All right.
You know, send him my phone number, Naughty. Pass it on to him, then that way you can just text me, and I can text you back.
Okay.
All right, that'll work.
All right,
y'all, we out.
Yeah. All right,
easy.